Love in the Christian community is not just a feeling that I feel and tell you I feel it, but it is put into words and it is put into actions. And the legalization of doctor-assisted suicide in Canada may lead to an increase in the level of care that religious facilities provide as an alternative.
On the feature this week, Dr. Theodore Van Ralta on the theology underlying palliative care. In the news, debate on Ontario's Bill 89 is coming down to the final stages. Another push on parental rights in Alberta's education system. We Need a Law presents on maternity benefits, and a debate in Ottawa on sex-selective abortion.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
Debate on Ontario's Bill 89 is coming down to the final stages. This is the law that's supposed to replace the Child and Family Services Act, and it requires child protection workers, foster parents, adoption service providers, and others to take into account and respect a child's race, ancestry, place of origin, color, ethnic origin, disability, creed, sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. Earlier this month, ARPA lawyer John Sikkema made a brief appearance before the Justice Committee at Queen's Park.
I only had 5 minutes at the outset to speak, so I focused specifically on why adding the human rights list to this bill is bad public policy.
Sikkema says there's some very practical problems with the way the bill is written.
When it comes to gender identity specifically, this is something that by dropping it into this bill is problematic because unlike something like a child's race or what have you, gender identity and gender expression involve behaviors that parents might respond to differently depending on the circumstances and the child.
The committee started the wrap-up of its consideration of the bill last Thursday, and it's headed back to the legislature soon.
This is the stage where amendments are most likely to be introduced, and that's why we have a new action item on our website, a new easy mail specifically on Bill 89, recommending a couple amendments that ARPA thinks would be very helpful.
We've got a link up to that easy mail letter, as well as to a blog piece John wrote about his appearance before the committee. Pressure is mounting on the Alberta government over those gay-straight alliance clubs. Blogger Teresa Eng, who's been covering this issue ever since the introduction of Bill 10, is asking parents across the province to write to Education Minister David Egan and to ask him some specific questions with respect to those links to pornographic websites on a government-sponsored page. Links that she discovered last month.
What I'm asking people to do is to write a maximum one-page letter specifically asking for public assurances that the people who were responsible for providing and offering the sexually graphic material to children on that government-funded and recommended website are not still being entrusted with authority over our children and our education system through things like the curriculum rewrite and resources and research and teacher training.
While the letters should be addressed to the minister, Ang is asking that they be mailed directly to her so she can pass them on. She says there's a good reason for that.
Last year, we had thousands and thousands of people who wrote to the Minister of Education about concerns regarding the Alberta Education's Guidelines for Best Practices. Unfortunately, what happened was that these letters, because they were private, they just got shoved in some drawer or box somewhere and they were completely ignored and dismissed and disregarded.
We've got a link up from the Lighthouse News homepage where you can get more information on where to send the letters. Teresa would like to have them all in by early May. We Need a Law has a new admin assistant. Alicia Ibbotson has a background in medical research. She started her job earlier this month, but even before she was officially on board, she appeared by video link as a witness before Parliament's Human Services Committee, which is looking at improvements to maternity benefits.
20% of women who seek to have an abortion, they state their number one reason as financial. So basically, I was focusing on finances, especially on women whose finances could put them in a position where they cannot take care of themselves or their child. So I did three proposals. One was for there to be a minimum amount you can receive for your maternity benefits, because some people, their maternity benefit is quite low, like $600 a month or something you could just never live on. Also, there is a new system in place where you are able to work on your maternity leave to subsidize, to help out with your benefit. But unfortunately, it's on a percentage base as well. So somebody like me, who makes a maximum amount of maternity leave, which is a fair amount, I can make 40% of my benefit. someone who makes a very little, they can also only make 40% of their benefits. So they're as well, they're not able to help themselves out as much. And then the third recommendation I gave was for them to actually be able to process your paperwork in time so that you can actually receive your child benefit as soon as your child is born. Sometimes there's a 2 to 3 month delay before that child benefit comes. And for some families that are very low incomes, it's very difficult for them to live in that gap where they're not receiving that income inflow.
She says the presentation was generally well received.
The part that was received the most positively was being able to fill out the paperwork earlier, because the idea of that cost the government no money whatsoever. The problem comes when people are asking for the child tax benefit before the child is born. That's a pro-life issue where they're saying this is not a child and we are saying yes, it is a child. So I didn't want to go there. I wanted to say, please let us fill out the paperwork when we are pregnant or in our third trimester, which very few pregnancies are lost that late, so that we can receive the child benefit as soon as the child is born.
The committee will report back to Parliament on the issue later this year. And finally, there's a clip that's been making the rounds on social media lately of an exchange between Lethbridge MP Rachel Harder and Maryam Monsef, the minister responsible for the status of women. The exchange happened in a Status of Women committee meeting and centered on the issue of sex-selective abortion. Listen in for yourself.
One of the things that is rarely discussed is a report that came out in 2012 from the Canadian Medical Association. And in this report, they actually talk about gender-selective abortion. So they talk about, here in Canada, there are actually upwards of 2,000 abortions that are committed every year in order to essentially get rid of girls. Now, I would say that this is actually gender-based violence targeted at little girls, pre-born girls. And so I'm wondering if you agree with this statement.
Your statement being
Is this violence? Does it fit within your mandate?
I believe that violence comes at a spectrum, that it can
it's actually a really
physical,
simple question. It's
that
just
it can
yes or
be
no.
psychological, that it can be emotional, and that it can be cyber.
So in this case, do you believe that this is discriminating against girls?
I think what you would like to speak to me about is abortions, and I believe that women have a fundamental right
I'm asking
to be able
about
to
gender
control
selective
their
abortions,
reproductive
which were identified
health
in this report. Do you believe that sex-selective abortions, as identified by the Canadian Medical Association in 2012, are gender-based violence? Yes or no?
I believe that any sort of gender-based violence is wrong. I understand that women and girls in Canada are vulnerable to all sorts of forms of violence.
Okay, thank you, Minister.
Back with more after this.
On Thursday, May 11th, Canadians in seven cities will be marching for life in either the national or one of six provincial marches. Reform prayer services have been organized in Victoria and Ottawa prior to the marches in those cities. You can find more information about the marches, prayer services, and even free lunches at arpacanada.ca/events. Please join us as we call for justice for the most vulnerable in our nation.
On the feature this week, a look at the theology that drives Christian opposition to euthanasia and support for palliative care. Our guest is Dr. Theodore Vendralta. He's a professor of ecclesiology and ethics at the Canadian Reformed Theological Seminary in Hamilton, Ontario. The audio here is taken directly from the eighth installment of ARPA's Palliative Care video series.
How do we love our neighbor in a situation where love has been so redefined as to include putting people to death, whether voluntary or involuntary euthanasia, requested or not? Our practice of love would include taking jobs as nurses and doctors, if we can in good conscience continue, and doing palliative care. Our families should be a model of love. When one of our loved ones is in ER and we surround the bedside and sing some psalms and hymns, it should be a witness to the community that there's a different approach to matters of life and death, and that the sanctity of life ethic is robust and warm, and it really is an ethic of love. Let me give you an example. One of my colleagues had an uncle recently who went into cardiac arrest and went into ER. While there, his condition did not improve, and he was comatose, and his heart rate was being monitored, his breathing was being monitored, and his heart rate was at about 110 beats per minute. The family knew that he loved psalms and singing, so they did so around the bedside in the middle of the emergency room, and every time they sang, the heart rate level went from 110 down to 80, invariably, just to show that he was comforted. And this is the kind of thing that Christians want to do in palliative care. We don't believe that it's love to put someone to death, but it is loving to increase their comfort, decrease their discomfort, and just love them and be there. I was ordained about 17 years ago and served as pastor for most of those years, except for a time when I was doing further study. And yes, there were a good number of times where I was in hospice or palliative care tending to a parishioner. In every case that I can think of, they were surrounded with family and were blessed with a good number of children and grandchildren around them, or if they were younger, many siblings. And in each case, the care of the hospital or the hospice was tremendous. It was extraordinary. They were really cared for and loved. The concern was to alleviate their pain just provide them with the best atmosphere with their family around them. When I think about something like end-of-life care, it's not just that person's suffering and pain, but my response to your suffering and your response to my suffering forms me. It's not just about you experiencing pain and having it alleviated in some way, but what's happening to me inside? How is my character being formed and developed in the midst of caring for someone who is in need? The way that we treat them doesn't just reflect who we are, but forms and shapes who we are. And looking at us as not just blobs of material, but body-soul combinations in some holistic way, speaks to this. And it speaks to palliative care, it speaks to end of life. I think it's something that needs to be recognized. The legalization of assisted suicide is just another step in what seems to be a program of secularization. But it certainly does something to who we are as society. It puts a chill into society. I would explain it this way. I go to a palliative care facility. If we take the example of British Columbia right now, palliative care facilities do not offer physician-assisted death. They're looking at offering that, and some physicians are strongly opposed. Now, they rightly point out that their patients are in an environment of care and trust. They trust that the sole purpose of the palliative care facility, the sole purpose of being in hospice, is to be cared for, to feel worthwhile, to matter, and just to be loved and surrounded with love. As soon as you put in the option of physician-assisted death, you're now faced with the question, does this doctor want me to live, or would this doctor rather have me die? It erodes the trust relationship that you would have with the doctor. The lack of care for the marginalized, the poor, the underprivileged was a mark of pagan society for centuries. We really live in a Christianized society, and so many of these good things have grown and developed out of a Christendom of sorts. So we can look back and see that in the Roman Empire, the church was the body that people began to recognize cared for the exposed infants. If anything is central in the Christian community, it's the words of Jesus. And the Lord Jesus is the one who is known throughout the world as the compassionate teacher who laid down his life so that others would live. And in his ministry, he once said, and I'm thinking here of Matthew 11, and I just have my Bible here, where Jesus said, "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." When I look around society, when I look inside myself, rest for our souls, what more do we want? We want peace, and there's such a lack of it in this world. And Jesus invites people to him, and he's particularly looking out for the marginalized, the downtrodden, the poor, those without any means to care for themselves. And the Christian community adopted that as its ethic to such a degree that the Apostle John would write, "Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love." And love in the Christian community is not just a feeling that I feel and tell you I feel it, but it is put into words and it is put into actions. And the legalization of doctor-assisted suicide in Canada may lead to an increase in the level of care that religious facilities provide as an alternative, so that people can go where they will be served by those who believe that love is of God.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.